Blog Talk Radio.
Real Sports Talk Radio on the air right now. I am the one and only Randy Zellia, along with Mike Tramatazzi. Mike, good evening.
What's going on?
Oh, there's so much going on.
Is there?
I still put a little bit of Van Halen on in the background. You know what I mean? Like, you still got to keep a little bit of it there, because it's such an awesome song. So... Big playoff games tonight, man. Unless there's anything else that's in the news, I really like that San Antonio Dallas series. That's big tonight, right?
Yeah, isn't that what everybody's been talking about all day?
Oh, I think that where they're talking about the fact that the MLS season is starting soon.
I could have sworn they were talking about the NFL draft.
Yeah. or the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Let's get it out of the way.
Let's talk about the 500-pound elephant in the room as I'm getting ready to watch the Bobcats and the Heat, and there's already solidarity with the Inside Out shirts like you saw yesterday for the Clippers Warrior game. The comments of Clippers owner Donald Sterling has rocked the NBA world, and it's the shocking part as I'm watching TNT and you see that the Heat are taking out their white hot shirts and putting them in the middle of the floor and wearing their jerseys inside out. I like the unity that the NBA is showing against this. So we are in a different time now where, you know, yes, there is such thing as freedom of speech and people can say what they want. But the difference between what it was 10 years ago, 20 years ago, than it is now, is you can say what you want, but then you got to deal with the backlash that's coming with it. Oh boy, was there backlash. And Mr. Sterling has certainly found himself in a hot mess right now, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens from here on out. You know, what's going to happen with, you know, the Clippers? What's going to happen tomorrow night at Staples? What's going to happen, you know, I'm just reading some of the headlines today. Mark Jackson's calling for fans to boycott Game 5. I'm trying to figure out if fans are really boycott. What can Adam Silver do right now?
I don't know. The more I read it and the more I see the outrage for it, you still have Van Halen on, by the way. Is that what you're still going for that?
I'm sorry?
You still have Van Halen on. Are you going for that? I just didn't know if...
Yeah, I'm going with that.
Okay, just making sure. I don't know. I mean, you've got Mark Jackson who came out and said today if a fan of either team, Warriors, Clippers, shouldn't come to the game. That's the he said, if it was me, I wouldn't come to the game. I believe as fans, the loudest statement they can make as far as fans is to not show up. And everybody wants to say that. I don't know if Adam Silver, is anybody really going to take any punishment short of him being forced out? I don't think so. I think the call from people that are very popular in the NBA and very important and powerful in the NBA is you don't want to make this a situation that festers to where it starts taking away from the games. And the minute you do that, then it's a situation that is hurting the entire game. Instead of one loser that has a history of this, that's the best part, there's some people that are shocked and outraged someone would say this. If you go and read, it's not out of the realm of possibility from Donald Sterling, given all the problems he's had with the housing lawsuits and discrimination and stuff like that. It's terrible that this guy is now taking aspects away from the games, because it's been a fantastic plus that I think a lot of people worried about. It's been amazing. It's been overtimes, road teams winning, lower seeds winning. Everything you want in the playoffs is happening, and you're stuck talking about this BS, basically.
Right.
And I think he should be gone. I think he's one of the worst owners. But he's just he's a dirtbag. He's just a dirtbag. If you watch him at the games, he just gives off that vibe of, like, a grimy slime ball, really. I mean, there's really no other way to say it. And I don't know. I don't think fans should show up. I think they should make a statement like that. That's as big a statement as you can make. I think the players should wear their jerseys inside out.
I'm going to be
you have to
frank.
Throw, you can't support it. So.
I'm going to be frank and honest about this. And, you know, one of the reasons why we call this show Real Sports Talk Radio is because we take the topics and we talk about some topics that other shows are talking about and other, you know, the main topics, and we give a different spin on it, and it gives us our opinion to also be a little bit more uncensored. You know, we were able to give our view on it. Well, here's my opinion on this disgusting type of situation. Again, I'm one of the people, and I said this on Beyond the Benches yesterday when I called in and helped out Ryan for a little while. I said this, and I was very honest about it. I said, I want to know more information. I want to hear more facts. I want to know that it's definitely his voice. But the fact of the matter is, we're at a different time. We're at a different time where, you know, we're at now with equal rights, both for African-Americans and, years ago, you know, African-Americans fought for equal rights, and they won that, and they earned that, and they deserve it. You know, we look beyond the color with in today's society. It took a long time for women's rights to come through. And now, you know, now you have some women doing men's jobs. I always felt because, you know, we broke that race barrier that, you know, Barack Obama was the first black president. I predicted we were going to have a first black president before we had ever had a women's president, because we're going in order. You know what I mean? Like, we first had civil rights, and then we had women's rights. So this makes, you know, that made sense. But for Donald Sterling to make these types of comments in a league that is, Mike, correct me if I'm wrong, did they say it was like 77% African American, or maybe even more, like 85% African American? The dumbest thing that anyone can ever do. And so, you know, and sadly, you know, on a day we should be honoring, like you said, the great playoff runs that we've had so far today, and as well as the passing of Dr. Jack Ramsey, talking about the great Dr. Jack and what he's been able to deliver to the game, we're stuck talking about this controversy, and it's not right. I did just receive a statement from the Portland Trailblazers. The statement from Trailblazers owner Paul Lannon concerning the comments allegedly made by Clippers owner Donald Sterling. In response to the racially charged statements allegedly made by Los Angeles Clippers owner Donald Sterling, Portland Trailblazers owner Paul Allen has issued the following statement. The kind of statement attributed to Clipper owner Donald Sterling, if true, are abhorrent and not acceptable for the owner of an NBA franchise or anyone in professional sports. We at the Trailblazers reject any and all such sentiments and believe the NBA leadership should take swift and impactful actions in this case. So when you have teams making these type of statements, it's serious. It's a serious situation. And the league has to act sort of quickly on it. And look, tomorrow night could be mutiny at the Staples Center.
Well, I mean, you've got a 2:00 press conference, so you know, you'll have your decision by game time. But it's a disaster. I don't know if you can really put it in any other simpler terms. It's a disaster for the league. It's a disaster for a commissioner that's been in the job for 3 months, 2.5 months. It's a disaster for a league that already, for some reason, has a image problem among some people. in terms of its racial divide, where it's so often, you know, there's so many African-American players to white players or whatnot, and for some reason that tends to lend itself to the idea that NBA players are thugs and get in trouble and all these things, when it, compared to the NFL, which everyone loves, I think it's 0.1% of the NBA roster, if you want to say, gets in trouble. But nobody wants to look at that because they just have their preset mind conditions. When you see these people doing what they've done, dumping their shirts, turning their stuff inside out, showing a uniformity and solidarity that sometimes you don't get in sports, it's kind of refreshing, and it's good. It's good that the LeBrons of the world, of the game, are stepping up and saying this isn't acceptable in our NBA. You've got Michael Jordan, who, he's not the best owner, but he's the most obvious owner. He's the most known owner. He's probably the one owner who pulls most power from non-basketball people, given his name and his marketability when he was playing. He's making these statements. Paul Allen is probably their richest owner. Mickey Arison is one of their top owners. Peter Holt of the Spurs. I know Ted Leonsis from the Wizards made a statement as well. There have been others. I can't remember them all, but you want to see this. You want to see that there's this no tolerance for things like this, because it's not acceptable. It's not acceptable in society to say these things. It's crazy to me that in 2014, even an 80-year-old would have these types of sentiments. But it's not obviously something that he just came up with. It's something that he's had for a long time now. But you have to move past these things because now it's another thing that people look at down for the NBA. You know, nobody talks about the NFL's like lack of racial hirings when it comes to GMs and coaches and stuff like that. They mention it in passing, but it's not really a topic discussor when you bring up the NFL. This is a topic discussor for the NBA right now, and it has to go away. It has to go away, and it has to go away by you showing that it won't stand, and you have to have no tolerance for it. To me, anything less of Sterling being forced to sell his team, which the owners can vote on and remove and force him to remove power, he has to agree to it, but I think the pressure from the other owners would be great enough for him to accept it. Nothing less of that's going to work. Nothing less of that will work. And it's unfortunate that, like you said, we're not talking about the games, but it's refreshing in a way that when something this stupid comes out, that the important people in the league and the faces of the league are meeting it head on and saying, no dice. This isn't flying. No way that we're going to allow someone like this to work, to be involved with our league. And that's good. That's a good thing. Now Adam Silver has to run with it. And like I said, I think the only anything less is going to make this a continuing problem. So he's got to do what a lot of people want him to do, but that has never really been done.
Well, let's put a bow on this topic. I'm interested to see what they say tomorrow at 2:00. Interested to see where we go from here. Let's start moving to on the court. Let's talk about some of the series. Let's talk about the breakdown for the rest of the playoffs now. Right now, Miami is playing Charlotte in Charlotte. To show you that the NBA did not really care too much about this series, knowing that Miami is going to get these guys, you know, get them to Charlotte out of here so quickly, they didn't even send an A-announced team. They have Greg Anthony and Brian Johnson doing the game, and they had Rachel Nichols.
Brian Anderson.
Yeah. Brian Johnson, I'm sorry. Brian Anderson is
he's so
sitting there doing the game.
You don't remember his name.
Yeah, that's like, you know, Al Jefferson is sitting this game due to his he tore his plantar fasciitis right now. They're in that beautiful arena in Charlotte. I've been in there. It's very nice. Next year, there'll be the Hornets again. So this is officially, this might be the last game of them being the Bobcats. So it's going to be very interesting to see, you know, the outlook of that. If the Bobcats are playing for pride, let's get a game here. This team, since rebirthing themselves as the Charlotte Bobcats, made the playoffs twice and has not won a playoff game yet. So we are interested to see if they can put a win together here. Mike, listen, I think we're someone said the other day the Bobcats were two players away. I agree with it. I think Kemba Walker is growing into being a nice point guard for them. Al Jefferson is still a very, very effective scorer. He doesn't play defense, but he's an effective scorer. Kid Gilchrist is really coming around. I think, when the Heat are done with this run, I think if the Charlotte can keep these core guys together, some of these young talent together, they'll be a 4-5 seed for a couple years. I don't think they'll ever go to the top of the Eastern Conference, but I think with one or two additions of players, maybe veteran players, I think that they're going to end up in the top 4 or 5 in the East.
Well, I think if Kit Gilchrist and Bismack Biyombo reach the belief that we think they can get to in terms of their talent, then I think you're absolutely right. And I would think a top 3 seed, maybe 3. I don't know if they can ever get to a 1 or 2. But I think a 3 seed is legitimately possible if those are their two important things. If Kid Gilchrist and Biyombo become what we think they can be to complement Jefferson and Kemba and Gerald Henderson to a lesser extent, even though I don't know if he's ever a guy you're ever going to want to pay, because he's a 15-point-per-game guy, and I think that's his ceiling, and that was kind of the vibe on him coming out of Duke. I think you're absolutely right, but I think those are the keys right there. Those two guys are the guys that need to take that next step. They're the most important piece to this team going forward, is Biyombo and Kid Gilchrist, because their potential's off the charts. They just have to get there. If they can come close to it next year, I think you can see them making more progress. And then if they can ever reach their full potential, I mean, Kid Gilchrist has the potential to be the top defensive wing player in the league. He's that good defensively. If he can ever develop his offensive game to match that and become like a Trevor Ariza type in his prime, even though Ariza's having a lights-out series for the Wizards, that's where I'm going to start calling them the Hornets. That's where the Hornets are going to start taking that spot, because they will be the Hornets next year, and I'm very excited about it, and we're done with the Bobcats.
I actually, like I told you, I'm a very big fan of this young team. I predicted that they were going to be in the playoffs this year, and everyone laughed at me. Both you and Jose both laughed at me when we were doing the pre-show, the preseason show. And Jose sitting there saying, "You've got to be kidding me. You're picking the Bobcats to be in the playoffs?" I said, "Yeah. They're a young team. They're going to be running up and down the floor. They're a good team. And listen, look, I'm not going to sit here and build up Charlotte like they're the second coming of, the Miami Heat. The Miami Heat are a stellar team. They're obviously go for another three-peat this year. The path is Toronto is not helping Brooklyn's cause here. A win last night would have really helped Brooklyn get themselves ready for Miami. Now, the Miami is going to come out of that series. Whoever comes out of the Toronto-Brooklyn series, obviously Miami's going to be rested. I think the first game of that semifinals is going to be very, very close with Miami making mistakes. Because Miami has shown when they have enough time between series, they always come out rusty. And last year they did it against Chicago, and Chicago beat them game one. So it's going to be very interesting to see what goes on. Now, if the Bobcats can push them to 5 games, make them work a little bit, then it'll be very, very interesting. But I highly, especially without Jefferson not there, I don't see the Bobcats winning a game in this series. What's your prediction for Brooklyn and Toronto at this point?
I think the Nets were so bad last night in the second half and in the fourth quarter. I don't know. I don't know. A lot of people are like, they're still a really solid team, and they're going to be they're battle-tested. To me, their transition offense stinks. Their defense goes through lapses where it's absolutely dreadful. It was that way in the first quarter. And then their half-court offense was terrible in the fourth quarter. Too much of, we're going to get it to Paul Pierce because Paul Pierce has done this before, and he's going to make big shots. Well, Paul Pierce was terrible in the fourth quarter. As good as Paul Pierce was in the first three quarters, he was that bad in the fourth quarter. I think the longer this series goes, the more it helps Toronto because they've got the fresher legs. You want to talk about, there's no back-to-backs, so that the Nets won't be playing back-to-backs, and they were bad all year in back-to-backs. But if this series goes seven games, that's seven games in, 11 days? 14 days, maybe? 15 days? That's still a lot of basketball for a team that's average age is not under 30.
Yeah, I agree with you. I absolutely agree with you. Listen, Brooklyn is a good team. Love Garnett. I love Paul Pierce. I think they have a championship pedigree. This was not a team that was built for the regular season, obviously. This was a team that was built for the playoffs. Now you're in the playoffs. I don't understand why you're resting Garnett as much as you are. That's the part that I'm having a very, very, very difficult time with. Why are you resting Garnett? Why are you not, putting it all on? Like, there is a possibility that Toronto could win this series. So
I think
you agree with me on
six.
What'd you say?
I think Toronto wins in six because if they win, I think they'll win, was it tomorrow night, in Toronto. And I don't know, the Nets didn't play well in Game 7 last year at home. And I know it's a different team because you got Garnett, you got Pierce, you don't have Brook Lopez, whatever. You don't have a distinct home court advantage, I'll say. They want to pipe in their Brooklyn chants and they want to do all that. They go right ahead. There were a ton of Raptor fans there last night.
Of course.
If it goes game seven, is it going to be a loud, raucous arena that's pulling for the Nets, like say Oklahoma City would be, or the Garden would be, or the Staples Center would be? As bad as the Staples Center is, it's better than the Barclays Center. And that's not saying anything about the arena. That's saying about the people inhabiting the arena. I don't think they're real Net fans. And I didn't want to go on this tangent, but I went on it last night with my friend. I would say, of the people that go to Net games, I would say 10% are probably Net season ticket holders from New Jersey. I think another 5% are people who became fans of the team, who didn't maybe follow basketball, who became fans when they moved to Brooklyn, or were NBA fans that didn't have a distinct team, were a fan of the league and picked Glenn because now they're in their backyard. I think the other 85% are people who are like, Brooklyn, Brooklyn. It says Brooklyn on their chest. I live in Brooklyn. That's me. No. That's BS. People who maybe left were Knicks fans that left because now I got a team in Brooklyn. That's bogus. Your fan base is fake. Your fan base is fake. Your team is a bunch of fake tough guys that are past their prime. It's just fake all the way around. They pipe in the Brooklyn chant, which was organic the first game of the year and was legitimately one of the cooler things I saw, opening night against the Raptors last year where they had that Brooklyn chant. Now it's piped in every time, and they pipe it in, and then the fans kind of carry it for like one more Brooklyn, and then it fades out. Just because you're playing Biggie beats and Jay-Z beats does not make me want to watch your team. I'm sorry. It's not going to work. It may work for some people, but it won't work for me.
Well, I agree with you. I rarely say that, but I agree with you. I think that the Brooklyn – look, I remember I was at the Toronto Nets series back in 2007 at the old Izod Center, Continental Arena, whatever you want to call it. And I sat there and – during that playoff series, I saw a lot of Raptor fans. Raptors fans are loyal. They're going to come down because they're the big building game in town in Toronto.
There were more people in Maple Leaf Square last night than there were Net fans at the Barclays Center. I'll say that right now.
Well, I want everybody to also keep in mind that you are a Knicks fan. Okay, let's be fair here. Okay, let's be honest. Let's be upfront and.
In the issue of full disclosure, I hate the Nets.
Yeah, Let's get it out there.
But in fairness to me, I don't think I'm saying anything that's not true.
No, I say let's take everything in stride here, and you know let's keep things in perspective, and let's be honest. I'm a Net fan, but I think my years of working around the league and everything has helped me. I think the best way to say it, it's helped me understand. Look, I could be you could be a fan of any team in the world, and any true fan who eats, sleeps, and breathes and takes it personally when their teams lose and so forth are going to find excuses or going to find reasonings for things that happen. Look, for those years where before Jason Kidd, I had no real good excuse on why like, oh my God, yeah, you know, we have all this talent, like Khalid, yeah, the Nets just traded Kenny Anderson for Khalid Reeves and Kendall Gill. Oh, what a step up. Okay, listen, you know, back in the day, we all knew that when Kenny and Derek left, it was the rebuilding process was on. And so what we ended up with for a long time was a team that really just didn't have anything going on there. It's being realistic. A realistic sports fan. You know, for years and years and years, I listened to Knicks fans when the team was bad, when the team was awful, trying to defend the moves that Isaiah Thomas was making, trying to defend some of these, you know, the acquisition of Stephon Marbury and try to justify some of the nonsense that was going on in Madison Square Garden. I heard Knicks fans this year trying to defend the nonsense that was going on at Madison Square Garden. You know what I call those people? Unrealistic. And those are biased fans. And that's okay. There needs to be biased fans out there. And that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that, Mike. Okay? I've learned that by working in this industry for as long as I have, you don't take it personally anymore. You don't have to wear your heart on your sleeve when it comes to the teams anymore. I don't wear fan gear. And like the only team I think I'm close with that now is the Giants, fading away a little bit as I walk into the locker room. And, like, I wanted to go over to Hakeem Nicks after one of the games. I'm like, how do you drop that touchdown pass? No, can't do that. It would be awesome if I could. But, you know, I have to say that, fans are not very not realistic. So, listen, Brooklyn Nets fans, okay, I call those people frauds at this point too, because look, and this is me calling out my own people, okay? And I think because the fans of that team, the people that were traveling from New Jersey who were driving out to Brooklyn all the time, those are the true fans from this franchise. Those people who were taking off their Knicks colors and putting on Brooklyn colors. No, those people don't deserve to speak. You can't, and I don't want Net fans to feel that I'm attacking them either. This is realistic. When Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce come out about their home crowd and say the crowd was okay, but the crowd we had in Boston was much better. Okay, I can't argue with you. Look, you have, where's the connection to this franchise? Where's the connection to these players? There's one thing that I'm very jealous about being a fan of a team like the Bobcats compared to the Nets, is you're watching these young kids be drafted to your team and grow. You know what I mean? Then you get to watch those guys grow. Those are your players. That's why being a Knicks fan is very, very difficult, because those are not your players. They're somebody else's players that were drafted, and they're coming there to play with you. Some of them traded. Some of them, you know, signing, you know, free agency, and none of them drafted. Amon Shumpert, there's a reason why there's a love fest between Knicks fans and Amon Shumpert. It's because it's their guy. He was bought in by the Knicks. That's their guy. There's no real love affair with Carmelo Anthony. There's no defending Carmelo Anthony. Knicks fans should be furious that Carmelo is even considering picking up and leaving, or talking to Jakeem Noah about what it's like to play for Tom Thibodeau, or ask for the max contract when you don't have a lot of money to play with to go out and get new free agents. Knicks fans should be furious about that. If I was a Knicks fan and I was eat, sleep, breathe orange and blue, I'd be furious that Melo's still talking about getting another max contract. How much money do you need? So, I know I just went on a total rant here about this, but this is like right now Miami Heat fans, they're all fair weather fans, and I've been down in that arena too. When they're good, the crowd shows up. When the team is mediocre, they'll show up every once in a while. When the team is bad, empty arena, man. Beginning of the season, empty arena. I was there for a couple games during the Shaq Wade era, and man, that place was spotty at best. So, so be a true fan. The people who travel from Jersey to Brooklyn for their season tickets there, those are real fans. The people who shed their colors from Knicks to Brooklyn, those are frauds. So that's my rant for the night.
Hey, I think we have the same idea. I just took it out on one team. You took it out on the whole league.
Well, no, I think, and that's one of the reasons why we started talking about with the age limit thing. And we're going to jump into a whole other topic. I mean, we still have six series we still have to talk about in a half hour. But you know, this goes back to what we were talking about. The league drafts these kids at the age of 18 or 19 years old, and this is why I think there should be a fight for a 21-year-old age limit in the NBA. Because if you raise the age limit to 21, you're establishing that these guys are going to know the game of basketball by the time they get in the league and not have to teach. The coaches are not going to be teaching these kids how to play the game. They're already going to know how to play the game, and they only have to worry about winning ball games, not educating the 19-year-old how to play the game of basketball in the NBA. I think by doing that, you won't be having coaches raise a player, and then by the time they're a free agent, they walk away from the team. I love Kyrie Irving like the next person, but by the time he's fully developed as a player, he'll be bolted from Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? I hate to be the sad reality about that, but that it's really the truth. You know, that's what's going to happen to them, and I'm going to feel really bad for Cleveland fans. There is a minority of Cleveland fans that still feel that LeBron James is going to end back up in a Cleveland uniform next year. And I just don't know if it's going to happen.
No, it won't. It's a pipe dream. It's a fun pipe dream to think about, but it's not. It won't.
I would love to see LeBron and Kyrie Irving, and maybe you're able to get a big, oh man, you know how awesome it would have been to see a guy like Al Jefferson or maybe Millsap, or maybe if the Hawks decide to part ways with Horford, and they all end up in Cleveland together? Wouldn't that be a scary squad?
Yes.
There's nothing else to say. All right, so we talked about the Bobcat Heat series, Raptors Nets series. You think Raptors in six, I still say Nets in seven. I was hoping that the script was going to be followed by the way the 2007 series between the two teams went, but didn't. The Atlanta-Indiana series is at 2-2, 8 o'clock tonight. I think game four woke up the Pacers. It was the first sign of emotion and first sign of life that I've seen from the Pacers in a long time. It was a sign of life for them. I think it was an eye-opening win for them. And I think they're going to take care of business to at least get to the next round. I'll tell you something, man. Roy Hibbert, someone made it, I think it was Mike Lupica this past weekend, when they were talking about the Hawks-Pacers series. I don't think getting Evan Turner hurt them. And I don't think C.J. Watson being out with injury hurt them as much as bringing Andrew Bynum onto the team is. Because, you know, Andrew Bynum is probably sitting there I think Andrew Bynum sitting there at the end of the bench with Roy Hibbert, sitting there saying to Roy, "Roy, man, how come they're not letting you get yours? Why are you letting him do that to you? Why is Granger the guy? You know, why is this guy the guy?"
There's something to be said about upsetting the apple cart. They didn't need Andrew Bynum.
No, they didn't need Andrew
Bynum. Because they didn't, but they went and got him because they didn't want the Heat to get him.
Well, the thing is, though,
like
if the Heat really...
It's almost like in 2000 when the Yankees acquired Jose Canseco to keep him away from the Red Sox. The 2000 Yankees didn't need Jose Canseco. They're on their way to winning a third straight World Series. But they didn't want the Red Sox to have Jose Canseco. So they went and picked up Jose Canseco and claimed him on waivers before the Red Sox could.
But my question is, if the Heat really wanted Andrew Bynum, they would have gotten him already.
Yeah, they
could
have
signed
him. Bynum picked the Pacers.
Right, but the thing is, though, no, they gave him the option, and the Heat's offer was just not there. The Heat's offer was just not there. And so, of course, he was going to go with the Pacers. But, you know, I think that Miami tried him out first, and Miami Heat put him in for three different tryouts. It just didn't work. So I think LeBron's in there saying, listen, I'm not here to babysit. And,
plus, they already
so
have Greg Oden. Do you really need two centers that have barely played the last couple of years sitting on your bench?
Do you really need two centers that are, like you just said, sit on the bench and not do anything? That's what it comes down to. So,
but I think the idea that Evan Turner screwed everything up is not out of the realm of possibility in this essence. By the way, why does Josh McRoberts feel the need to, like, every pass he... I think his long hair has made him think he's Pete Maravich. but back on topic, I still don't think the Pacers will get out of the second round. I think the Wizards will give them a ton of trouble. The Wizards can match them down low in terms of strength, Nene and Gortat. Plus, they're getting a lot more out of Trevor Booker than I think a lot of people thought. And their backcourt, I don't think Stevenson against Beal is going to be amazing because Beal plays the game like a 10-year pro, and he's so good with not wasting movements on the basketball court and knows where he's got to go. Stevenson is a ticking time bomb. Can frustrate him, and I think Wall can dominate George Hill. I just think the Wizards are playing really, really well. I think we need to pat ourselves on the back a little bit for being so unanimous in the fact that the Wizards would beat the Bulls. I think they can beat the Pacers because the Pacers are the same type of team, maybe a little bit younger than the Bulls, but not by much. If you look at it, not by much. They're a defensive-minded team that can't score. The Wizards defense is actually middle of the pack. So.
Yeah, the problem with Chicago is right now is they're a great defensive team, but yesterday proved that they were down at number one and number two score. Dunleavy, Boozer, Taj Gibson, these are guys who you're going to say, all right, you're my number one option. Whoever plays Chicago, you're not sitting there saying, okay, you know, they're going to dump the ball in the Dunleavy and Boozer. Those are going to be the two guys we really have to watch out for.
Yeah, but the Pacers offense is basically George is going to penetrate and dump it out to a West jumper, or George Hill's going to dump it to George in the base on the baseline for a three, or Stevenson's going to be mad and take a couple possessions of his own. So... No, I think you're absolutely right. Both teams are really limited offensively, and I think that kind of plays into the Wizards' hands because the Wizards are so dynamic offensively. Ariza can score, Nene can score, Gortat can get you a double-double if he has to. You have Wall and Beal that are probably the best young backcourt in the game, bar none, and that includes Steph Curry and Klay Thompson.
By the way, I just want to let you know on a self-indulging, egotistical way, I feel so good that I was able to predict that putting Gortat on that team was such a brilliant move. Like,
oh, we loved it. We loved it. I mean, I don't think we can emphasize enough how right we were.
Yeah, you and I sat there. We're just like this is gonna change in the face of the Wizards season. And everyone's looking at us going, It's Gortat.
Yeah, they're going Gortat. He's an 11-point-per-game guy, and we're like, you don't understand. It doesn't. It makes. It lets Nene play the four. Come on, people.
Yeah, the problem is we live in an NBA world now where there's no center, power forward, small forward, guard, and guard.
Exactly.
It's now like a forward, guard, alignment, and a power forward. And by them adding Gortat to the team, gives them the center, gives Nene to being the power forward, and lets Ariza be the swing three, and it gives Bradley Beal and John Wall the opportunity to be the guards, might be the best overall starting five in the East. And the problem that they had in the beginning of the year was injuries and was adjustment to coaching. And what scares me is they can add a couple pieces off the bench. They need a guy like Kyle Korver coming off their bench.
Well, I think Webster's their Kyle Korver, but I think you're right. More consistency is needed. What I think they need is they need a point guard that can carry the tempo when Wall is out of the game. Garrett Temple's not that, and Andre Miller's not that anymore. As good as Andre Miller's been, he's not that anymore. He's 37 years old. I think they tried with Eric Maynor, didn't work, but they were in the right ballpark in terms of that's what they need.
Do you know who they need?
I mean, if they had Beno Udrih, just as an off, Beno Udrih, he's not great, but that's what they need. They need a guy that's got the legs to at least play that tempo and keep it going.
You know who they can probably benefit from having? And it's probably your thing. I'm crazy for saying this, especially since he already signed. He signed for multiple year deal down with Dallas. They need Devin Harris. Devin Harris still's got the speed.
Yeah.
He's still got that.
Mm-hmm.
He's got that speed, and he can really do something different for them.
Yeah. Again, I think you're in the right ballpark. I think Maynor and Devin Harris right now are still in the same ballpark. Harris is obviously, I don't think he ever was the player that he was played up to be. Whether that's his fault or his development was stunted, who knows? I even think a guy like Mo Williams is perfect in Portland because he does that job. He keeps the tempo when Lillard comes out. That's, I think, what the Wizards are missing. And I think it doesn't hurt to get another guy down low, especially if Gortat leaves in the offseason, which I think it'd be very tough for the Wizards to let him go. I think that's got to be priority number one, is to get him signed long term. But it doesn't hurt to add that. You can never have enough bodies that are athletic.
I agree with you on that.
Not a lot of people realize how good Trevor Booker actually is at doing the dirty work. When you have guys on the perimeter, and this comes back to how we talked about how you build a team around Carmelo Anthony. When you have guys on the perimeter that want to score, you need guys that will do the dirty work, that will play defense, will grab rebounds, will keep possessions alive, are good at setting screens, you know, things like that. That's what Trevor Booker does really well. And I think the series, the more you've seen the fourth quarter, they're putting him out there and Gortat's sitting on the bench. And that's not anything against Gortat in terms of his ability defensively, but it's just their ability to match up. Booker gives them an ability that when someone wants to go small, like putting Gibson in there, and Gortat and Nene are kind of limited athletically from playing out on the perimeter, Booker can do that. And he's a very important key in today's NBA, which you noted is very light on big men, but needs perimeter defenders. And he's a low-post guy that can run out to the perimeter if he had to and play a Taj Gibson that wants to play, you know, shoot 15-foot jumpers, or play a Chris Bosh that shoots 15-foot, 18-foot jumpers. So he gives them that flexibility.
Here's my question for you. Assuming there's not a lot of huge, crazy movement during the NBA offseason this year, do you think, again, Keith, I'm going to assume that the big three are going to stay together in Miami. How much different do you think the NBA Eastern Conference is going to be? I think, and the other question I have is, do you think that if the Bobcats ended up with the Pacers in the first round, do you think that the Bobcats would have knocked the Pacers out? Well, first question, though, how much different do you think the Eastern Conference is going to be next year, assuming that everybody's healthy and everybody's, you got the pieces that you have? How much do you think that these are the same eight teams next year, or do you think that there's a couple of substitutions?
I think you have to expect that maybe the Knicks are going to be better. I think you have to expect that you're going to get something better out of Atlanta. But I think really, I don't know. I don't think you can look at the Eastern Conference and say there's really another team that's going to jump in outside of the Knicks. I mean, is Detroit going to make a jump? Who knows? They kind of have a logjam in the front court that they can't seem to figure out. Are the Bucks going to do anything?
I'll do it.
No. Is Cleveland? Really, I think New York and Cleveland are really the only two teams that going into next year you would say maybe they could substitute for one of these teams. You know, do you think Atlanta's not going to make it next year because they're going to continue to try and make the best out of their extra draft picks? Do you think the Nets are going to take a step back if Garnett retires and Pierce leaves and things like that? How do they work in Brook Lopez again? Maybe. But I think the Wizards and Bobcats are two teams that I don't think we're talking next year that they're going to be in trouble in terms of a playoff spot. I think they're two teams that going forward you can legitimately expect to be in the top five. I think the Bulls may take a step back because they're getting older. You know, and I don't think Indiana's a great number one. So, yeah, I don't know if the Eastern Conference you're going to say is new teams are going to be in, but the teams that are in at the lower seeds, the Washingtons, the Charlottes, the young teams that have been up and coming for a couple of years that we've always talked about having a ton of talent, they're going to be teams that can win the conference as a five seed or a six seed, and it's not going to be out of the realm of possibility. That's where I think your big change is going to come from the Eastern Conference, because this year when push comes to shove, people are still going to think that Miami is going to win because they're Miami and they've been to three straight finals.
Okay,
but next
so then,
year it wouldn't surprise me. It wouldn't surprise me.
Okay, so let's do our favorite game. Let's go in the time machine. Let's see if we can go up and do this. Let's go with Indiana, like you were just saying. Indiana back in the playoffs next year. Not seeding, but are they back in the playoffs next year?
Is Indiana back in the playoffs next year as what, the one seed?
No, just in the playoffs next
year. Oh, I think Indiana's in the playoffs next year, but I don't think they're anywhere near the one seed. I think Indiana's got a really big problem here because they're the same team that can't score, and yet they somehow have a guy averaging 25 points per game on their roster. How do you not score? How do you not crack 100 points per game when you got a guy averaging 25? That means the other eight guys that play in your rotation only have to score 75, and you still can't do it.
Okay, so Indy's in. That's the main question. Indy is in. Miami, obviously. Okay, Miami is in as long as they keep the big three together. Toronto. What do you think? I think Toronto stays in, but they're a lower seed.
Yeah. I think so. I mean, I don't know how much you can really expect them to move. I mean, they had the third best record in the Eastern Conference. And I think, you know, it's tough to say. I mean, they won the division in a year when no one expected them to, and they played really well. They're a very young team. And you got a guy in Valanciunas that can be a monster when he figures everything out. And that still hasn't happened yet. And he's already averaging a double-double this series. So I think I'm actually a little bit higher on the Wizards than you are. But, I mean, they were a three seed this year. So if they win the division but they're a four seed next year, then technically you're right. So
I think this. If you look at the teams, I think Indy stays in. I think Indy stays in. Miami stays in. Toronto stays in, but they're a lower seed.
Would you agree that New York and Cleveland are probably the only two teams that could jump in from last year, from this year that weren't in?
Yeah, but here's my thing. When Atlanta was healthy this year, Atlanta was a four seed. They lost Al Horford, and when Al Horford was healthy, him and Paul Millsap were both scoring 20-something a game, and Jeff Teague was averaging 13 assists per game. Again, then we talk about the big men in the middle. It was key, and so before they got hurt, they were there, and they were a four seed. They lost a lot of games because of injuries.
True, but I also think it was early enough in the year where we're not quite sure. You know, would they have still been really bad if Horford was playing? Maybe, I don't know. They really didn't want to make the playoffs, and if the Knicks had won a couple games at the end of the year that they didn't end up winning, yeah, the Knicks would have been in the playoffs. And maybe Mike Woodson's not fired. So, hey, you know what? This all worked out for the best.
So there you go. So I don't know if Atlanta would have been. I think Brooklyn might be, if they keep everybody, then they're fine. That's, I think they'll be a, maybe they'll be a four seed. I think Chicago, if Chicago doesn't make some moves to get some people who can put points on the board, they're done. I think Chicago is going to take it.
Chicago and Indiana are in the same problem. They didn't figure out that in today's NBA, you need to make stops, but you need to score. You can't win in today's NBA with scoring under 100 points. It doesn't happen anymore. You can't do it. The rules won't allow it. B, there's too much emphasis based on offense that the offense players are so good in the NBA today that you can play great defense, and Carmelo Anthony can still score 40 on you, or LeBron can still score 40 on you, or Steph Curry could still score 40 on you. When you don't have a guy that could do that, you're in trouble. Chicago doesn't have it. Derrick Rose at his best was a 20 to 25 point per game guy. Very rarely would Derrick Rose go off for 40, 50 points. Same thing with Paul George. I think Paul George can get there. He's still a baby in terms of his basketball life. But they're in trouble. You're absolutely right. They're in the same problem. They're the same team. They're built the same way. And unfortunately, it's built for great regular season success because you're playing bad teams a lot of the time in the regular season. But you're not playing.
Right.
You're not playing the Bucks and you're not playing the Bucks and the Pistons in the playoffs.
Well, that's what you know.
That's where their problems get brought out.
The Nets were not built to be playing the Bobcats, the Pacers, the Sacramento Kings, the Grizzlies. You know what I mean. Keep going through some of these teams going, having a good team, a bad team, a good team, a bad team. The Nets were built for a playoff run. So
yes, but
of all the playoff teams,
I think Toronto is the one team that they didn't want to face because of their youth and their style of play. The Nets can't get lured into a game of up and down. When they do that, as you saw last night, their transition offense is awful. And their transition defense is just as bad.
Awful was a compliment to what it was last night.
But let's move into the West because we've spent a little too much time.
We have to touch on four series. Okay, Houston and Portland. I think has been the most exciting first round series, and it sucks because I would love to see these teams go seven games and have like overtime every single game.
Yeah, it's kind of like that Boston-Chicago series was in 09 where everyone was like, this is amazing. I remember that double overtime game, and I think five of the seven games went to overtime. You know, that was one of the great NBA series of the last 15 years. This one is just as good, and I'm so happy that the rest of the nation is seeing how good LaMarcus Aldridge is, because every NBA fan knows how good LaMarcus Aldridge is, but a national audience is now seeing that this guy is one of the two or three best big men in the league, and it's not crazy to say that. And Damian Lillard's doing nothing but just cementing himself as a top five point guard for the next 10 to 15 years. So I love this series. I think a lot of people just assume that Houston would win because, oh, they know James Harden, they know Dwight Howard, and they know Jeremy Lin. Those are three names. A lot of the non-NBA or like-minded NBA fans didn't know Lillard and Batum and Wes Matthews and Aldridge and Darrell Wright and these guys that are a very, very good team. And they're making a statement. They're going to be a very tough out in the second round because they play so well and they have so many options. They have three guys that can score 20 points at any night, and usually all three do.
Yeah, I'm really convinced that this was the best first round matchup. The Memphis OKC. I don't know if does it me or does that series feel like it's a little flat. You know, I just don't feel it. They had an overtime game already. That series has been very fun to watch. Durant and Westbrook are. I think what we've been saying about Durant and Westbrook is finally coming true. Okay, you know what you're getting from them, but where is your rest of your offense coming from? And that
yes, and
sort
and,
of,
Yeah, we spoke about that. Until Reggie Jackson showed up, I mean, it was bad. It was bad. They were struggling to get to 100 points, and they had two guys that were scoring 25. So the other guys couldn't even get to 50. But I think I think we all agree that if Reggie Jackson can score 15 a game in the rest of these games, they're going to win, and they're going to win pretty easily, because Memphis is also in that position of having very tough time scoring and generating offense. So when you look at it, there's this idea that Oklahoma City can score whenever it wants, but they can't. They need a third scorer, and if Jackson doesn't have to score 30, but if Jackson can score 15 or 16 the rest of the way, I think they win. And I think it makes them very tough in the Western Conference. That being said, if the Clippers fall apart and lose and the Warriors get by, I think that's a tough matchup for them, because I don't think they have another defensive weapon outside of Westbrook that can guard Curry or Thompson, because I think Jackson's not there yet defensively. So they may get burnt a little bit having to play Cephalosha on one of those guys and forcing Durant to play David Lee or Harrison Barnes, and that could be a problem. I think the Clippers, if the Clippers get through, they present problems too, because they have more weapons than the Warriors do. The Warriors are pretty guard-heavy, and that's about it. But I think where their strength is presents a unique problem for the Thunder, because it forces them to go a little off balance with their defensive matchups, if you will.
Here's one that I've been sitting there saying about the OKC Thunder. This is going to be the tough call right here. This is going to be, I think, this is the make or break year for the Thunder, is if they don't do it this year, I don't know when they're going to do it. And some of these younger teams are catching up to them. The Golden State Warriors are still a fun team to watch. They love to shoot the threes. I didn't buy into the Clippers, because I don't know if you agree with me on this. We only have about 3 minutes left. I don't know if you really fully agree with me on this, but the Clippers have a good foundation with Griffin and Paul. I feel like they still need a swing guy. Because I still feel you can put any other center.
I'll tell you this. I think they thought that Dudley would be that swing, that kind of stretch three that can do a little bit of everything and shoot well from the outside and kind of draw defenses out. But I think you're right. I think they thought maybe Reggie Bullock could do that as well. Not a waste, but I think he's a year off, and I think this year is really going to help him in this offseason. But that's not an insane statement. Yeah, I mean, Matt Barnes is limited now in his age, and Dudley really isn't what they thought he was going to be in terms of what he could give them.
And I think
now,
at this
I think
point in
pick
time,
and rolls, I'll say this right now, I think off pick and rolls, Redick is a dangerous option when he's healthy with Chris Paul if they do like a 1-4 pick and roll with Griffin and Chris Paul, if Redick is on the weak side, that's a lethal three player set right there. Absolutely lethal.
I don't think it's too far fetched at this point. To pick for me, this is going to be the remainder of my playoffs. I think the Clippers and the Warriors is the only series now I can't really predict, because of the Sterling stuff might have taken them out of it. I predict that OKC is going to beat Memphis. I still think San Antonio is going to come back and beat the Mavericks. I still think that they're the best team in the NBA, because they're the only team that can run, push the offense, slow down the offense, and control the defensive end of the ball. So I still love San Antonio. Portland's going to knock out Houston. And in the East, obviously Miami, Washington's going to close out Chicago. I still think Brooklyn in 7 and Indy in 7 as well. So those are my picks.
I think if you're going across everything, I think Raptors, Wizards, Heat, and Pacers, and then in the West, I got Warriors, Thunder, Blazers, and Spurs.
And there you have it. That's Mike Tramontozzi. I'm Randy Zellia. Real Sports Talk Radio every Monday night from 7 to 8:30. We're only doing 8 o'clock tonight. No feature presentation guest. Until next week, see you then.